Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Tammy Carver. Welcome to the John Carver Show. My husband has helped thousands of people around the world lead happier and more successful lives. Whether you're just beginning to lay your foundation or you've already built your life but need to shore up some weak spots, this show will help you.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Today's text I'm calling, it's in the follow-through. It's in the follow-through. Nothing great has ever happened unless there's follow-through. No degree is earned, by the way, without follow-through. No weight loss achieved without follow-through. No book read. How many times have you, I think a lot of people can vouch for this, they've started a book, they're two chapters in, and now 5 years later, they still haven't finished that book. How about no book written? You have all these ideas, and you know, one day you get inspired to put something on paper, and now 27 years later, it's still somewhere in a file drawer somewhere. How about no song recorded because there hasn't been follow-through? Or maybe no building built because there's no follow-through. Or anything else in life that hasn't been accomplished because of the lack of follow-through. If you want to turn over to the book of James in the Living Bible, it kind of paraphrases a bit this theme, or at least part of this theme that we're going to talk about here today. Over in James chapter 1, it says, happy, and in verse 12, this paraphrase says, happy is the man who doesn't give in and do wrong when he is tempted. It says, for afterwards he will get as his reward the crown of life that God has promised those who love him. I'm in James 1. Now verse number 13, it says, and remember, when someone wants to do wrong, it is never God who is tempting him. For God never wants to do wrong and never tempts anyone else to do it. And here's the verse in this particular piece, verse 14. Temptation is the pull of man's own evil thoughts and wishes. These evil thoughts lead to evil actions and afterwards to the death penalty from God. And so don't be misled, dear brothers. Don't be misled, dear brothers. How many times haven't you and I given into any form of temptation that got us off the track of doing stuff that we should have been doing, that we started, that we have great intentions to complete, but the temptation or the temptations over a period of time got us distracted from stuff? Temptation comes in many forms. Oftentimes we think of temptation coming in one form or two forms, but really temptation comes in multiple forms, including to distract you from a direction that you know you should be headed over a period of time. A little booklet called Our Daily Bread had a story. It said the story is told of Andrew Jackson's boyhood friends that couldn't understand how he became a famous person and then president of the United States. They knew of other men who had greater talent, but who never succeeded. So one of Jackson's friends said, why, Jim Brown, who lived right down the pike from Jackson, was not only smarter, but he could throw Andy three times out of four in a wrestling match. But look where Andy is now. Another friend responded, how did there happen to be a fourth time? Didn't they usually say three times and out? Sure, they were supposed to, but not Andy, you see. He would never admit, listen, he would never admit that he was beat. He would never stay, quote, throwed. Jim Brown would get tired, and on the fourth try, Andrew Jackson would throw him and be the winner, you see. Picking up on that idea, someone has said, the thing that counts is not how many times you get your throwed, but whether you are willing to stay throwed. We may face setbacks. We must take courage and go forward, the article says, in faith. Then, through God's power, we can be the eventual victor, and then there's no excuse to stay throwed. I know for some of us, it's oftentimes tempting to stay throwed. It's oftentimes tempting to stay down when you get knocked down over and over again. I've been recently attracted to some forms of wrestling. I can't remember the initials, UHC or something like that, where these guys get in the ring and really box it out. Not boxing, but it's just really intense, blood everywhere, and literally punching each other out. Well, these guys get knocked down over and over again, but they know that if they're going to win, they have to get back up and stay on their feet in order to keep fighting multitudes of times. In his book, a guy named Craig Brian Larson writes, in 1972, NASA launched the exploration space probe Pioneer 10. He said, according to Leon Jaroff in Time magazine, the satellite's primary goal was to reach another planet, photograph the planet and its moons, and beam data back to Earth and the radiation belts and all this. But Pioneer 10, the story says, accomplished much, much more. Swinging past the giant planet in November 1973, Jupiter's immense gravity pull hurled Pioneer 10 at a higher rate of speed toward the edge of the solar system. At 1 billion miles from the sun, Pioneer 10 passed Saturn, and some 2 billion miles it passed Neptune and other planets, and then Pluto. And then by 1997, 25 years after its launch, Pioneer 10 was more than 6 billion miles from the sun. So the story continues. It says the little satellite that could was not qualified to do what it did, because the goal said that, you know, it could only do so much. But because of gravity pulls and other science stuff that I don't quite understand, it did far beyond what it was built to do. And I wonder if some of us realize that we are wired to do much more than we think we're wired to do. Over Philippians chapter 3, it kind of paraphrases a point where it says, God cannot work through someone who quits. It doesn't say this exactly, but if you read between the lines, it says that God can't do great things with people who quit before they accomplish the great things. In Hebrew, in the language of Hebrew, it talks about the encourager. And in the King James Bible, it talks about how the Holy Spirit comes alongside us and to encourage us. In fact, some of the definitions of the Hebrew language calls the Holy Spirit to give strength, or to comfort, or to encourage, or to put into your soul the strength to do things that maybe you think that you could do. Or another way to say it is the Holy Spirit is there to give you strong heart, to give you the power to do the things that maybe you can't do all by yourself, or maybe the strength that you think that you don't have. God will come alongside you and give you the power to do the things that you think that you can't do it all on your own. Turn over, please, to 2 Timothy chapter 3. The Message paraphrase puts it in another unique way. 2 Timothy chapter 3, starting in verse number 1. 2 Timothy chapter 3, starting in verse number 1. There is a part of follow-through that you and I are responsible for. Oftentimes I've met people who cast the blame on other people why they can't do certain things or why they're not in a certain place in their life. But Timothy tells me, Paul tells me, the Bible tells me that we are at least responsible for some of this journey, some of this follow-through. Let me explain. 2 Timothy chapter 3, a paraphrase of it says, "Don't be naive. There are difficult times ahead. As the end approaches, people are going to be self-absorbed, money-hungry, self-promoting, stuck-up, profane, contemptuous appearance, crude, coarse, dog-eat-dog, unbending, slanderers, impulsively wild, savage, cynical," and it goes on to a bunch of other adjectives. And it says at the bottom, "They'll make a show of religion, but listen, but behind the scenes they're animals. Steer clear of these people." So to me, in my simple mind, I think that if I choose to hang around some people long enough, sometime, if you hang around somebody with fleas or a dog with fleas, you're going to get fleas. Some people choose not to get baths. Some people choose not to clean their minds of stuff that can eventually erode their follow-through. So again, if you and I don't want to be distracted with our follow-through, then we need to be cautious who we hang around. Now, there's a difference between hanging around people to make a difference in people's lives, certainly, and hanging around people and not making a difference in people's lives, and you allowing the negativity and the doubt and the fear and the anxiety to jump over on you. So you and I have a responsibility to be mindful of the company that we keep. Again, you and I have a responsibility to be mindful of the company that we keep. And I can't speak for you. I can't really assume that this next example fits your life. But have you ever been in situations or circles or groups of people that these groups of people are acting in a certain way, and automatically you start acting that way just because you're around them, whether it's anger, whether it's fear, whether it's panic, whether it's doubt, whether it's pick, then you start pick people, right? Because you tend to hang around these people, and then those people, you know, sometimes affect us in a certain way instead of the other way around. So if you have that problem, then you need to be careful who you're hanging around, because those people can literally stop you in your tracks. Now, there are some people who are not headed where you need to go. Think about that. There are some people that are not headed where you need to go. So if there's people that are not headed where you need to go, then why would you choose to invest too much time with people that aren't headed in your direction? Yes, you're supposed to influence. Yes, you're supposed to encourage. Yes, you're supposed to mentor. But there comes a time when if you're taking exit 31 and I'm taking exit 35, then, you know, we're not going to end up on the same road at some point. So why would you stay in the car or get off the exit when you know that it's not where you're really headed? So there's some people who will keep you from completing your mission in life because they're not going anywhere in life. I've shared this before, but oftentimes we take advice from people more messed up than we are. I'll say it again. Sometimes we take advice from people more messed up than we are, or people that haven't really done 10% of what you've done, and they have all these words of wisdom when they haven't even been there and done that. So you need to be careful. You need to be careful who you allow into your mind. David George writes, "There is nothing so fatal to character as half-finished tasks." Again, there is nothing so fatal to character as half-finished tasks. I'll go back to what I said in the beginning, that there's so many people who start and stop, and oftentimes they start and stop, and the starting never starts up again because of other priorities and other struggles and other issues. During the Vietnam War, millionaire H. Ross Perot decided that he would give a Christmas gift to every prisoner of war in Vietnam. According to David Frost, who tells the story, Perot had thousands of packages wrapped and prepared for shipping. He chartered a fleet of Boeing 707s to deliver them to Hanoi, but the war was at its height, and the Hanoi government said it would refuse to cooperate. No charity was possible, guys explained, those in charge explained, while American bombers were devastating the places around them. The wealthy Perot, he affirmed, offered to help rebuild them if our government had knocked them down. And Christmas drew near and the packages were unsent. But refusing to give up, Perot finally took off in his chartered fleet and flew to Moscow, where his aides mailed the packages one at a time and at the Moscow post office, and they were delivered intact. So the point of the example is oftentimes you and I get roadblocks and difficulties and struggles, like I shared before I started the tape here today, that there's got to be a way around it. Yeah. Sometimes we see the roadblock, we see the difficulty, we see the road construction, and we fail to realize that there's always detours, there's always bypasses, there's always a way around, under, through where you're trying to get to, if you have to have the mindset of follow through instead of giving into the discouragement of, you know, there's a roadblock, that must mean I must stop. In my life, I found that people who get stuff done find ways to get stuff done. Again, people who get stuff done find ways to get stuff done. Maybe it's recreating the wheel. Maybe it's recreating what you used to do in a different form, in a different packaging, to get the end result that you're trying to accomplish. The story said, Wilma didn't get much of a head start in life. A bout with polio left her left leg crooked and her foot twisted inward so that she had to wear leg braces. After 7 years of painful therapy, she could walk without braces. At age 12, Wilma tried out for the girls' basketball team but didn't make it. determined, she practiced with her girlfriend and two boys every day. And the next year, she made the team. When a college track coach saw her during a game, he talked her into letting him train her as a runner. By age 14, she had outrun the fastest sprinters in the U.S. In 1956, Wilma made the Olympic team but showed poorly. That bitter disappointment, the storyteller says, motivated her to work. Again, that bitter disappointment motivated her to work harder for the 1960 Olympics in Rome. And there, Wilma Rudolph won three gold awards, the most lady had ever won. Well, she was born a certain way, but she didn't end up in a certain way. You see, that's where I'm still trying to get my point and that point across to so many people, is it doesn't matter where you start. It really, really matters where you end up. During a guy named Irving Wallace writes, during a Monday night football game between the Chicago Bears and New York Giants, one of the announcers observed that Walter Payton, the Bears running back, had accumulated over 9 miles of career rushing yardage. The other announcer remarked, yeah, and that's with somebody knocking him down every 4.6 yards. He accomplished, 9 miles, but everybody knocking him down every 4.6 yards. Now, to me, I don't know. I'm not a football player. I don't even understand the game hardly. But I mean, if that was real life, I mean, I think most of us would get discouraged after getting knocked down every 4.6. But Walter Payton understood that's the game. That's how it's played. That's his role. His role is to, frankly, get knocked down and to get back up and keep moving forward. You see, in the Bible, St. Paul was pumped up when he saw or found out that people were moving forward. If you want to turn over to Colossians chapter 1, Colossians chapter 1, New American Standard Bible puts it this way. Colossians chapter 1, New American Standard puts it this way. It says, Paul, an apostle of Jesus Christ, I'm in Colossians, New Testament, chapter 1, Paul, an apostle of Jesus Christ, by the will of God and to Timothy, a brother, to the saints, listen, to the saints and faithful brethren in Christ who are at Colossae, grace to you and peace from God our Father. I like that. Faithful brethren, faithful people. We give thanks to God, the Father of our Lord Jesus Christ. And again, if you skip down to verse 5, because of the hope laid for you, heaven of which you previously heard in the word of truth, the gospel which has come to you, just as in the world through his constantly bearing fruit and increasing. There's something to be said for constantly moving forward, constantly bearing fruit, constantly keep moving when stuff isn't really going the way that you really want to go. Skip down to verse 9. For this reason also, listen, for this reason also, since the day we heard it, we have not ceased to pray for you and to ask that you may be filled with the knowledge of God's will in all spiritual wisdom and understanding. Again, not ceased, which means they didn't stop. They didn't stop praying. They didn't stop doing. Verse 10, so that you will walk in a manner worthy of your Lord. Walk means doing something. It doesn't say stop. It doesn't say pause. It doesn't say put your hands up and give up. It doesn't say that. It says to walk. It means doing stuff. To please God and worthy of his calling, to please him, it says, in all respects, bearing good fruit in every good work and increasing in the knowledge of God. So just this little piece of scripture tells me that it seems to me that God respects those that are growing consistently, or at least making an effort to grow consistently. Because when you and I become stagnant, somebody said, I think it was my wife's old boss, I could be wrong there, but somebody said that when you stop growing, you rot. When you stop, you rot. When you stop growing, you rot. I don't want to be a rotter. I don't want to be one who rots. Paul was a go-getter. We all, if you know the story of Paul in the New Testament, Paul was a go-getter. He was a go-getter to do bad things, and then when his life turned around, he was a go-getter to do good things. And Paul, it seems, appreciated those with the go-getter attitude. Is it always easy to have a go-getter attitude? Because sometimes you don't feel like having a go-getter attitude. Sometimes you just want to coast and relax. But more times, the older I get, I realize that when you coast, you tend to go, the stream and the river goes downhill. And if you go too far downhill, you got a waterfall. And at the end of the waterfall is not pleasant news. So you're going to have to, life is all about swimming upstream consistently against the current, against the discouragement, because oftentimes discouragement can be absolutely overwhelming. And you've heard it come out of my mouth multiple times, how discouragement can shut you down. But unless you and I have that follow-through attitude, whether it's schoolwork, whether it's work, whether it's relationships, whatever it is, unless you continue to swim upstream, you're never going to be able to overcome much of anything. If you go back to James 5, it says, we count blessed, this is James talking, in James 5, he says, we count those blessed who endured. Again, we count blessed those who endured. You have heard, James says, of the endurance of Job, Old Testament Job, and seeing the outcome of the Lord's dealings, that the Lord is full of compassion and is merciful. I'll get back to Job in just a few. Chris Murray writes, I don't know if this is a word, but he said, fascinatingly, resilient, the tendency of a child, the tenacity of a child, not yet conditioned by society to give up when instructed to do so. Think about that a minute. How many kids understand the word no? Mommy can have a cookie, mommy can have a cookie, mommy can have a cookie, mommy can't go out to play, mommy can't go out to play. No, I mean, there comes a time when they just keep at it. And oftentimes society, at least in my world, tends to try to stop us from having that childlike stick-to-itiveness. That attitude that I don't care if I'm told no a million times, I'm going to keep asking, I'm going to keep doing, I'm going to keep moving forward. A magazine article talked about Gail Borden was obsessed with the idea of condensing food. His first effort, the condensed meat biscuit, failed miserably. But an ocean voyage gave birth to a better idea. Borden was concerned about the sickly condition of the children on board. Cows on the ship were too seasick to produce healthy milk, and four children died from drinking contaminated milk. Borden was determined to condense milk so that it would be safe and easily transported. After many tries, he devised a vacuum process that removed water from the milk. Conditions during the Civil War made the canned milk a success, and Borden made a fortune. His epitaph, inscribed on his tombstone in the shape of a milk can, was, I tried and failed, I tried again and again, and succeeded. Most inventors, most people who do stuff, there's far more failures before they have the breakthrough. And we've heard about Thomas Edison and the Wright brothers and how many other inventors out there. But there's so many more failures, but so many of us, we get stuck. We get our eyes stuck on what's not working instead of it putting us closer to the end result that we're trying to get to. I shared this a few years back, but John Wesley, the preacher of I don't know, a couple hundred years ago, he kept a diary. And oftentimes I go back to his writings because even though he lived a couple hundred years ago, more or less he still faced some of the same struggles that you and I do. Sunday, May 5th, he writes, preached at St. Anne's, was asked not to come back anymore. May 5th in the evening, preached at St. John's, and Deacon said, get out and stay out. May 12th in the morning, preached at St. Jude's, and can't go back there either. May 19th, preached at St. somebody else's. Deacons called a special meeting and said, I couldn't return. This is John Wesley. Sunday, May 19th, preached on the street and kicked off the street. You know, and then May 26th, in the morning, preached in a field and chased out of a meadow by a bull and was turned loose during the service. June 2nd, preached out the edge of a town and kicked off the highway. And then in the evening of June 2nd, afternoon, preached in a pasture and 10,000 people came out to hear me. But he didn't stop after the first rejection and the second rejection and the third and so on and so on and so on. And I do believe that that is the difference between people who follow through and those who don't follow through, because those who don't follow through get stuck on the nose. It's the same thing in sales. I mean, if you've ever been in sales or know people in sales, you're always told, well, the next no could be really a yes. Or you get through it, you got all your no's done this week, now you're ready for yeses. I've heard that, I can't tell you how many hundreds of times over the years. Again, we talked about moments ago what James 5 says. We count those blessed who endured. You have heard of the endurance of Job and have seen the outcome of the Lord's dealings, that the Lord is full of compassion and merciful, he says. But let me just share. We're going to jump into Job just a bit here today, but there's some context that I want to share before we get into Job a bit. It talks about in Job about Satan coming to God. So let me just back up and go backwards in time a bit to Ezekiel. Ezekiel chapter 28 talks about how Satan or Lucifer or the devil, whatever handle you choose to put on this being, was described once upon a time in Ezekiel 28. Now, I'm not going to get into all of it, but it describes the devil or Satan before he became the bad guy or before he turned to the dark side, if you follow Star Wars. He talks about that Satan was beautiful. He had precious stones all over his body. He was the anointed cherub. He was the one that brought worship to God. He was in charge of a lot. He was very intelligent, Scripture tells us. In fact, it goes on to say that in Ezekiel, it says, "You were blameless in your ways from the day that you were created. You were blameless in your ways from the day you were created until iniquity was found in you," it says. It says, "In the abundance of your trade, you were filled with violence and you sinned. So I cast you as a profane thing from the mountain of God, and the guardian cherub," this text says, "the guardian cherub drove you out from among the stones of fire." Now just imagine what that might look like. And this piece ends with, "Your heart was proud because of your beauty. Your heart was proud because of your beauty and corrupted your wisdom for the sake of your splendor." Let me repeat that again. "Your heart was proud because of your beauty and corrupted your wisdom for the sake of your splendor." How many times haven't you and I seen people that their arrogance was puffed up because of either what they look like or what they had or the money in the bank, etc., etc.? So if you want to go over to Job chapter 1, I wanted to give you a little bit of context, because in Job chapter 1 it describes something happening, but if you didn't know that the context before this, you might not understand where I'm coming from. So in Job 1 it says this, Job 1:1, "There was a man in the land of Uz, Uz, whose name was Job, and that man was blameless, upright, and fearing God, and turning away from evil." So Job was one of the few on the planet that God respected. Now this time frame, again, several commentators say it could have been this time and that time, but some have said it's between 1800 and 1900 BC is approximately, some say, where it happened. So others said that it happened way, way before that. I don't know. I wasn't there. I'm just sharing you what one or two folks said. So if you go up to go down to Job 1, verse 2 and 3, this describes a little bit of Job's wealth. Let me just share. Again, we're talking a couple thousand, a few thousand years ago. Job, in verse 2 of Job 1, says, "He had 7 sons and 3 daughters, and he owned 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen, and 500 donkeys, and a large number of servants, and he was the greatest man among all the people in the East." Now think about this a minute, because those of us who know what happens later, you understand that this is a big deal. Now, that gives a piece of who Job was. Now, if you get deeper into the book of Job, if you go to Job 29, and we're going to come back in the beginning, but Job 29, in the Message paraphrase, goes into a bit more detail about the influence that Job had. Now, in that culture, when you owned oxen and land and houses and all this, that in that time, in that part of the world, that means that you were really rich. So if you go over to Job 29, now this is Job talking to God through some stuff he had gone through. We'll get to that in just a bit. In verse 1 of Job 29, it says, "Oh, how I long for the good old days," this paraphrase. This is Job talking to God. "When God took such very good care of me, he always held a lamp before me, and I walked through the dark by its light. Oh, how I miss those golden years," the paraphrase says, "when God's friendship graced my home." Now, this is, for those who don't know, Job was lost a whole bunch of stuff. We'll get into that soon. But the Mighty One was still by my side, and my children were all around me. When everything was going my way and nothing seemed too difficult. This is Job paraphrases, right? Verse 7. When I walked downtown and sat with my friends in the public square, young and old greeted me with respect. I was honored by everyone in town. When I spoke, everyone listened. They hung on my every word. People who knew me spoke well of me. My reputation went ahead of me. I was known for helping people in trouble and standing up for those who were down on their luck. The dying blessed me, and the bereaved were cheered by my visits. All my dealings with people were good. I was known for being fair for everyone I met. I was eyes to the blind and feet to the lame, father to the needy and champion of abused aliens. I grabbed the street thieves by the scruff of the neck and made them give back what they had stolen. I thought this is Job paraphrasing. He says, I thought really I'll die peacefully in my own bed, grateful for a long and full life. So he goes on to describe how people viewed him throughout his lifetime. Now go back to Job 1. Job 1 verse 8 says, now it says that Satan goes up to God. Now if you look at earlier, well, we'll get to that. Job 1:6. Well, let's back up to 6. Now there was a day when the sons of God, in Job 1 verse 6, the sons of God is a description for the angels that God created, okay? Now, again, Job 1, verse 6. Now, there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord. Now, that sentence right there can, some would say, that can preach. That's a whole new sermon with a whole new target, which I'm going to try not to get to. And Satan also came among them. Now, this is after the fact, according to Job. This is after Satan was kicked out. He was the bad guy. He was on the dark side. He was Darth Vader himself, right? But Satan was allowed to come in with the crowd of good guys and to present himself in front of God. Now that's a whole new doctrinal stuff that I'm not here to get to. But think about that a minute. That's pretty deep. So it says, the Lord said to Satan, "From where do you come?" Then Satan answered the Lord and said, "From roaming about on the earth and walking around on it." So again, that can, if you get deeper into that, Satan is around. He's walking. He knows what's going on. Verse 8. The Lord said to Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job? For there is no one like him on earth, a blameless and upright and fearing God and turning away from evil." Now to my simple little brain, this is God bragging on Job. This is God bragging on Job. So I could probably go down a very dangerous road here in a minute. But sometimes I don't want anybody bragging on me because it kind of draws attention to me, and I don't want sometimes attention to be drawn to me. Just let me do my thing. Don't be bragging on me. Don't have people look at me. Let me just slide under the radar. But no, God chose to brag on Job. In other words, God was saying, may have said to Satan, hey, while you were checking out the people on earth, did you check out my boy Job? Did you check him out? So in verse 9, then Satan answered the Lord, "Does Job fear God for nothing? Have you not made a hedge about him and his house and all that he has on every side? You have blessed the work of his hands and his possessions and increased in the land," in verse 11. "But put forth your hand now and touch all that he has. He will surely curse you right to your face." Verse 12. Then the Lord said to Satan, "Behold, all that he has..." Now, again, this whole... I don't understand God sometimes. Verse 12. Then the Lord said to Satan, "Behold, all that he has is in your power. Only do not put forth your hand on him." So Satan departed from the presence of the Lord. Now, this again, verse 12. This can preach. This little phrase right there. There's a considerable sum of meat in there, but we'll not get distracted because I know I have ADD, but we're going to stay focused. Verse 12. I'm going to try to stay focused. "Very well then, therefore, he has everything in your power." But this paraphrase says, "But on the man himself, don't lay a finger." So that suggests to me, I'll chase it just for a second. I'll try not to go too deep here. But as I read this, then Satan has the power to influence and to touch our lives and to mess with our heads and to mess with what's going on around us. But also God has the power, according to the story in Job, to put limitations on Satan's power.
That's right.
So Job lost the longer story short is, of course, we could go through this in multiple chapters. That's not what we're going to do today. But Job lost about everything. He lost his sheep and oxen. In fact, he lost all his wealth. And more importantly, he lost his entire family. Lost his entire family. So if you go to verse 20 in Job chapter 1, then Job arose, and in that culture, when you were grieving, you ripped your clothes. Guys, they shaved their head and put ashes on themselves, which is a symbol of grief. That's what the culture did. In this culture, if you did that, you'd be labeled a certain way. So verse 20, then Job arose, tore his robe, and shaved his head, and he fell to the ground and worshipped. Stop, pause for a second. I don't know about you, but if you would have gone through the stuff that Job did, would you have the power or the tenacity or the grace or whatever other adjective that you want to put in there to worship instead of blame?
Yeah.
I'm not sure if I would be there, to be quite frank with you. And so he said, this is Job talking, this is after he fell to the ground and worshipped, he said, "Naked I came into my mother's womb, and naked shall I return there. The Lord gave, and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." In all this, the story says, Job did not sin nor charge God with wrong. Now, moments ago I shared with you the paraphrase of what Job said that God had been doing in his life. So Job understood the context of what he had. Job understood that all he had was because of the goodness and the blessings of God, that he didn't earn it. He wasn't so smart. He didn't have a great lifestyle per se that he built upon himself. He saw that God's blessings were because of God's blessings, not because of his very smart brain. So if you roll all the way forward to Job 42, in verse 10, the end, there's always the end of the story. Most of us haven't reached the end of our story, because some of us are still in some, because we're young, we're younger, we're in the beginning of the story, and some of us are maybe toward the middle of the story, and none of us here have really reached the end of the story. But in Job 42, starting in verse 10, it says, now, some of, for in context, some of, prior to Job 42, some of Job's friends came, and friends are in quotes, of course, and they gave him some advice that some of it wasn't that great. So verse 10 in Job 42. And after Job had prayed for his friends, the Lord restored his prosperity and doubled his previous possessions. All his brothers, sisters, and former acquaintances, this paraphrase says, came to his house and dined with him in his house. They offered him sympathy and comfort concerning all the adversity the Lord had brought on him. Each one gave him some money and a gold earring. So it goes on to share. So the Lord blessed the latter part of Job's life more than the earlier. So he owned 14,000 sheep, 6,000 camels, and he goes on to list. And then at the end of the story, it says that Job died old and full of days. Now, I'll be the first to tell you multiple times, I don't understand why God does what he does. But the context of this story is that Job followed through with what he knew, at least in his own heart, was the right thing to do. He worshipped God in the middle of stuff. Now, I can't imagine him being faithful and tenacity with all that he lost. And he had accumulated that stuff for a long period of time. I can't understand how I can't get my head around that. Maybe you can, but I can't. But Job understood that God was in control in the middle of it all. A guy named Theodore Roosevelt, you may have heard of him. He says, courage is not having the strength to go on. It's going on when you don't have the strength. I'll say it again. Theodore Roosevelt said, courage is not having the strength to go on. It is going on when you don't have the strength. How many times when it's in your life and the struggles you're going through and have gone through and will go through, that it's so tempting to stop before you get to the end of the journey because of the difficulty and the struggle and maybe the discouragement in the middle of it all. But then you look back in your own life, and I'll share this consistently in this church, that you look back in your own life and see the stuff that you thought that you couldn't overcome over the years, and you eventually overcame it, and you were able to take a step up and more steps up. And so if you remember what has happened, it can give you some sort of encouragement what may happen if you don't throw in the towel right now. Now, I found in my own life, and I love to study people. I mean, I study people when I'm driving. You know, I can, just to chase another detour here, I can tell how confident a person is by how they go around a turn. If they go around a turn slowly, they're not very confident, and I need to get in front of them because they're going to slow me down. Versus a person who rides on two wheels going around the corner, those are the kind of people I can follow because they're going someplace in life. Stuff like that, you can really understand and learn from people just by watching. If you just watch and observe. So I found that in my life, studying people, that the most obvious way is that people are tempted to stop moving forward when they're in the middle of the journey, when they're in the middle of their story, when they're in the middle of what they're trying to accomplish. The temptation is often easy to quit. I can remember when we were having our house built. It seemed like the house was not touched for 6 months at a time, or 5 years at a time, slight exaggeration. But, okay, big exaggeration. But I thought, when are they going to finish this house? I mean, they had the windows, there was no windows in it, and they were running the furnace. So we were heating the neighborhood. So our electric bills were $1,000 a month, $900 a month, $1,100 a month, right, Tammy? Several times, because the windows were coming in late. But we're paying for heating Manchester. That's how I saw it. So I was like, let's get the thing done. Well, I think if you and I don't have a sense of urgency to complete what I think we as in a group, or we as in individuals, were born to accomplish, then we're frankly wasting a tremendous amount of time, a tremendous amount of energy, a tremendous amount of passion. Because I don't know about you, but the older you get, there are days when some of that energy, some of that passion, some of that stick-to-itiveness isn't the way it was when you were 21. So it's easier, to, at least in my world, to maintain the forward momentum than stopping and trying to get the energy to get going again. Because once you keep going, it's so easy to keep going than starting and stopping all over again. Octavia Butler shares, first, forget inspiration. Again, forget inspiration. Habit is more dependable. Habit is more dependable. Habit will sustain you whether you're inspired or not. I like that. Sure. Habit will help you finish and polish your stories. Inspiration won't. Habit is persistence in practice. Again, this is Octavia Butler. Let me share it again. First, forget inspiration. Habit is more dependable. Habit will sustain you whether you're inspired or not. Habit will help you finish and polish your stories. Inspiration won't. Habit is persistence in practice. Habit is persistence in practice. It's so easy to keep going, or let me rephrase that. It's easier to keep going when you're going. Again, it's a whole lot easier to keep going when you're going. It's not so easy when, I'll say, 5 or 10 times a day. It's not as easy starting when you consistently stop. Follow through means that you have to go through stuff in order to be considered faithful. So in order to be somebody who follows through, then that must mean you have to go through stuff in order to be one who follows through. Have you ever met people who promised you this and that, and you know over years and over time that you can't bank on that? I mean, if they told you that they were going to be there at a certain place or do certain things, you can assume that it's not going to be done because they've built a reputation of lack of follow-through. Well, what Job went through, it seemed obvious, at least, 4,000 years later-ish, that Job was faithful in his belief that God had everything under control. Again, follow-through means that you have to go through stuff in order to be considered faithful. So following through happens when you don't feel like following through, but you do it anyway. Again, following through happens when you don't feel like following through, but you do it anyway. I think the older I get, that a person's word is worth more to me today at my age than ever before. Because there's fewer and fewer people that you can really bank on. And those people with integrity, those people with a word, that their word is gold, that their word is solid, that's the people that you want to hang around. The people that say stuff and do something different, that's somebody that's going to take you off your path. And those people won't get anywhere and do anything because guess what? They lack the ability or lack the desire or lack the tenacity or lack whatever other adjective that you choose to use to follow through, because follow through gets stuff done. So whatever you're going through, whatever struggle you're going through, don't stop. Just keep going, because as again Les Brown said, that it came to pass that what you're going through in some form or fashion will not necessarily be here forever. And how you view that in the middle of it will determine how you end up at the end, like Job, that yeah, he lost everything and I don't get that, I don't understand it, don't agree with it. That's I didn't create the universe, so who am I? I'm just a little tiny dot in humanity. What's my opinion count? But anyway, I understand why God does stuff. But in the middle of, or at the end of what Job went through, then he was still standing. He was still standing because he knew that all he had wasn't his anyway. It was all God's. So how you and I view stuff and how we keep going will determine how we end up at the end. I'm so fired up about my fourth book that came out. It's called Build Your Foundation, 68 Building Blocks for a Successful and Rewarding Life. I've compressed about 25 years of knowledge, experience, and learning from a lot of people to help you in your life. You can get a copy of it over at TremendousLifeBooks.com. Again, TremendousLifeBooks.com. Here's some more information about it. For the last 25 years, I've visited with thousands of people in their homes. Many of these people I've met with have no goals, no dreams, no ambitions, and no roadmap for their life. I've seen so many people sitting on their front porches watching life go by. In 2006, my wife and I started building our home with bedrooms for each of our six kids. I always made sure that the foundation of our home was solid. I didn't want to take any chances with the lives of my family. So it is with life. My book, Build Your Foundation, 68 Building Blocks of a Successful, Rewarding Life, is jammed full of ideas that can help you today. My book is a collection of ideas and short stories really designed to help you turn your life around and to help impact the people that you care about and that you love so much. Whether you're just beginning to lay your foundation or you've already built your life but need to shore up some weak spots, Build Your Foundation will help you fortify yourself for a lifetime of success and to give you the courage to go for your dreams in life. Don't miss out on what you can accomplish. You can scale any height and achieve any goal. This book will help you get there. I have a passion to help millions of people change their lives. This book is easy to read, has short chapters, and can help you right now and change your life today. I believe in you. Thank you so much for listening to The John Carver Show. If you want more information about me, just simply go to my website, www.johnwcarver.com. Again, thanks so much for listening to the show today, and remember, I believe in you.
Listening to The John Carver Show. Please tune in again right here Monday through Friday for more insights and opinions on how you can reach your goals and dreams in